those because I have a couple coming up throughout the month before I go on vacation, because I only got 3 weeks before vacation.
Right.
So, I mean, we might be able to do like one a week, kind of fit it in here and there, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
All right. Dave, are you back? Sounded like you jumped into a pile of leaves. Oh, maybe he's not back.
Heard the door close.
Oh, so did I. Then I'm like, well, maybe you closed the door. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking maybe something was up with his mic, but he hasn't come back.
Right.
How are the doggos?
Oh, they're hanging in there. We needed to have Jethro taken back because handling it.
Aww. Dave, are you eating chips? What are you doing over there?
Yep.
I'm like, that was very loud.
I was going to put it right next to the microphone, take a big bite, but apparently my microphone says, yo, never mind, I got it.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry. I'm so dry.
Well, probably because they're eating chips.
Sorry, Shawan. Shawan.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, Shawan.
Shawan.
All right. Are we all good then?
Yep.
No more chips.
Pretty sure.
Steve, you good?
Yep.
All right. I'm hitting record for Andor episode 4. And we're going to go in 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Mudhorn Clan Cast on the Fangirl Zone. I'm Sean Fangirl S.
I'm Steve.
I forgot what my name is for this. What is my name?
Beskar.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Steve. And this is Beskar Dave. Today, we're talking about episode 4 of season 1 of Andor, titled Aldani, written by Tony Gilroy and Dan Gilroy, and directed by Susanna White.
All right. After the last 3 episodes that aired all together, a lot of people were iffy. So what is everyone's initial reaction to this episode? Dave, go ahead.
Were they iffy? Oh, God. Shame on you for being iffy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. You know, not a lot happened on this episode, but it was still compelling. I mean, it's so interesting. They do it so well. And when it ended, you know, the title card came up or the credits, I'm like, oh, it's over. It's like over in 5 minutes. I had a friend telling me it feels like he watches She-Hulk and he goes, oh, it feels like it takes 2 hours. And he goes, and then he said, yeah, this one, Andor, it feels like 5 minutes because they do it so well and it's over. If we were rating this, I would give it 3.5 out of 5 payroll deductions.
Nice. Steve, what did you think?
I enjoyed this episode quite a bit. I loved how Cassian and Luthen went round and round, and then Cassian gets more going round and round with the other the group that he's been put into. So, yeah. Should be an interesting heist here next episode.
I enjoyed it. And kind of the same reaction Dave did at the end, because I was watching it with my husband and we're sitting here and all of a sudden it ends. It's like, wait, what? What? Yeah. Oh, crap. I keep forgetting this isn't a movie and this is just a series. So it's going to cut us off at some point.
Right.
Because it's like, ooh, they just explained it. And I'm like rubbing my hands together like, ooh, what's good? I can't wait to see this. I want to know what's happening. It's like, And I thought this episode gave us a lot of interesting things that I wasn't expecting.
Right.
That, you know, Cassian is now like a different name for this, you know, a couple episodes possibly. And
yeah, Clem.
Yes. Really? And then Luthen, we see a whole nother person emerge. It's like, what?
Weird.
And you see
Changeling.
Changeling. Was it Mon Mothma? And I'm like, oh, look, Coruscant's still here. It's like, oh, yeah, this is before. So I just love that they are, like, weaving things in and showing us a lot of things that I wasn't expecting. And then the leader, I guess, of Cassian's group at the end, it was driving me crazy trying to figure out who she was. And for those of you who are the same as me trying to figure out who she played the waif in Game of Thrones, the one who was just constantly giving shit. Like, for the House of Black and White. So it was like, why do I know her? So it was great. I loved seeing all of this and all the little intricacies that I wasn't expecting. And I honestly want to see more of what's going to happen at that dinner party, by the way.
Yes.
It's like, we're going to see some people, like, throw down. What's going to happen?
Yeah. Well, the recap is as follows. Out of options, Cassian is recruited for a dangerous mission to infiltrate an Imperial garrison.
Okay. Well, of course, we see Cassian and Luthen get out of Dodge, leaving Ferrix behind for now and leaving the box behind, which actually comes into play.
Yes.
Which I thought, again, interesting. I happened to watch the third episode right before this, because when I was watching again, my husband had not watched the third episode. So he's like, wait, why is she crying? Did the little boy die? And then I'm like, the little boy is Cassian. And he's like, oh, and it's like, oh, okay. So you see the two things happening at once from the third episode. And then you see this and you see how so much of it. It's like, are we ever going to see his family again and his friends and anything from before? And I'm still worried about his sister. But we have this all happening. And it was like, okay, now we're getting more of the Imperial or the Empire. And are we going to actually get more of the rebels and officially how everything's starting? Because we have the showrunner showing us Aldani, which continues to set up the Brewing Rebellion and everything that's happening in this awesome episode directed by Susanna White. And it's getting, see, even the pod dog agreed. Because the hero's call becomes harder and harder to ignore for Cassian this week, even though he barely got out alive. And I was worried that he was going to make a stupid decision, but I'm thinking, wait a second, it can't be that stupid. We know he lives because he was in the movie. But you know when you start watching it and you're like, is he going to make it? Is this going to happen? Because you get so invested in the moment.
Right.
It's like, oh yeah, spoiler alert, he doesn't die. So Cassian is trying hard to find his motivation to live, find his sister, and it becomes more and more apparent that the entire reason to join up with Luthen is just to save his own butt, at this moment anyway.
Yeah.
But everyone has personal reasons to stand up against the Empire. Due to the collateral that feeds into systemic supremacist ways that they maintain power, which we definitely got to see this episode more.
Oh, yeah.
And I was cracking up. It's like, okay, douchey McDouchebag, that's what you get. Because I was saying that, and even my husband was agreeing with me at that moment. He's like, oh, yeah, you wanted to go big. Now look. Like, oh yeah, you're not getting replaced, which we'll get to. Everyone knows what I'm talking about, because I really hope that you have watched the episode before you start listening to us, because otherwise this is really weird and a whole lot of spoilers, except the fact that Cassian doesn't die.
Right.
Here.
Oh, that was mean.
Well, we see Cassian and Luthen speed away to Luthen's ship, and the older man tells Cassian that he knows that what... Okay, wait. The older man tells Cassian that he knows for what they took away... What the fuck? That doesn't make sense. Am I saying it wrong?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not just reading it wrong. All right. Take three. The older man tells Cassian he knows what they took away from him. Andor would fight until his last breath, but he needs a good reason. So he offers him a chance to fight. And it's a heist that Luthen, okay, these names are killing me, needs Andor's skill set for. 5 days. 5 days is what I'm asking for you right now. And it's to steal payroll for the entire Imperial sector. And I thought that was interesting because you don't think about them getting paid.
Right. Get paid.
And it's like, I don't remember them ever mentioning it. Even when we had a bunch of them join up, like people just join up in the Bad Batch. Because it's like, well, I'm getting fed and housed and, you know, I'm fine. So like, you don't hear the mention of payment. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they're throwing it out. Now, I had a very Old West vibe from it. Right. I don't know how you guys felt with that.
I thought about the Avengers, and they said, how do you guys get paid?
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's been mentioned a couple times. It's like, do they have insurance?
Yeah.
In exchange, Cassian is going to receive 200,000 credits. More than he has ever imagined in his life, and a chance to continue his search. I hope he's going to send some back to his adopted mother and to help pay off all his friends. But that's the rub of radicalization that Andor gets so well. It's not about getting the resources to strike it rich by chipping away at the system, but it's to gather the necessities to overcome bigger obstacles in order to burn it all down. It sounds so dramatic when you say it that way, though.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, over at the Coruscant Imperial Security Bureau, that's something I don't think we've ever heard of before, have we?
No.
Anything in the books or comics? Anyone who's read those?
Nope.
We meet Deidre Miro, a supervisor with a score to settle with Cassian, it turns out.
You must this have a name generator, you know? You just plug stuff into a name generator.
They are killing me with some of these names.
Oh, good grief.
Thanks to Cyril's aspiration to be more than a deputy inspector, she finds out it was indeed Cassian who took her Starpath unit. Okay, calm down, lady. I honestly, the way it was playing out, and, you know, tell me what you two thought, I thought she was possibly working for the Rebellion.
Oh, I thought she was going to be in more trouble. If that was her Starpath, you know, why isn't she thrown in the brig or being knocked down a rank?
Okay, so.
Which almost happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, her boss kind of seemed like, we have you here for a reason. It's like, what, eye candy? I mean, what are you trying to imply there? But... we sense an impending Imperial demented meet. Wait, what? We sense an impending Imperial meet is on the way between Cyril and Deidre. They're about to give Team Rocket a run for their money. Are they? And Cyril needs a strong, capable woman to swoop in and save him from the petulant shame of his loss. His mom is a scary piece of work. It turns out. As she shuffled out of the Runacop head. Wait. What the fuck? I cannot read today. I am so sorry. His mom is a scary piece of work, as it turns out. And first she slaps the Runacop's face and then hugs him. Right. And brings him into his house. But apparently left the suitcases outside. I don't know if anybody else noticed that.
Yeah.
And I want to know, I think she's from Harry Potter as well. But I did not look it up. But I thought it was interesting that he just shows up, because I thought that they said nobody was allowed to go back to their personal quarters.
Right.
So you are correct on the Harry Potter.
Oh, that is okay.
This is our Arabella Fig.
Okay. She was the neighbor, I think. But he can't go back to his own place, but he can go back to his mom's house. Okay. But yeah, the whole time he was getting bitched out, like I said, I was like, haha, you deserve it. I love that his commander's like, I didn't even have anything to do with it. I wanted him to slap the guy in the back of the head. Maybe it was just me. But Miro, like Karn, has grown impatient with the way of the older guard, who would rather sweep small indiscretions under the rug. She wants to take their mandate of treat the sickness of disorder by doing the absolute most, and that means finding Cassian Andor. Again, I wish we would get a little bit more explanation other than this guy, you know, rolled up and stole something from me. She may just be Karn's saving grace by taking over jurisdiction on the Ferrix incident and one of the nastiest pieces of work on the Empire we've seen so far, which is saying something even this early into Andor.
On Aldani, where Luthen's secret squad is hiding out, Cassian journeys to a remote part of the planet. Personal assurance, Luthien gives Cassian a Kuati signet made of blue kyber as a down payment that means more to Luthien than it's worth. Wants to get it back at the end, which makes us nervous when any characters give people heartfelt mementos. It's like a space suicide pact. Luthien introduces Cassian as Clem after having a discussion with the team leader, Vel, taking on a mercenary, which as much as it can be a valuable resource, it can also bring problems.
I figured out that Clem stands for a contract loser employed monthly.
Oh, okay. They stay to get ready to steal the payroll data from an Imperial armory staffed by a whole garrison when Luthien disappears. Andor asks about their mysterious benefactor, and the team tell him they are not to mention him at all. Back on Coruscant, we finally get to see Genevieve O'Reilly as Mon Mothma as she visits an art and artifact gallery run by Luthien. Except it's not the Luthien we know. In an incredible little scene as he arrives on Coruscant himself, we see Stargard absolutely transform himself aesthetically and physically as he becomes this jovial speaking and fancy purple robed gentleman who sells expensive things.
I love how he was practicing like the smile and the handshake on his ship. It's like, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, this is night and day. It's so weird.
He and Mon exchange a few coded words and head to the back gallery away from Mon's guard to speak openly. And just as quickly as he transformed on the way in, here Luthien is just as much a chameleon. He reverts back to the old gruff and to the point man we know, pressuring Mon to use her links to get more money for their burgeoning rebellion. While opening her senatorial purse isn't an issue for Mothma, she reveals that she feels like she's being watched closely now and would prefer to bring someone else into their inner circle to help. Spies have become commonplace at the Senate. All the staff at her bank are suddenly new. Even her driver is a new face. Every day, a different paranoia.
Hey, who do you think the new person is? Do you think it's Princess Leia? Because I do.
Oh, that would be interesting. Luthien presses for the funds and rejects the idea of adding more people in their group of allies in high places because everyone is being watched. But Mon assures Luthien that who she has in mind is worth risking her position for, and that if she was wrong, she'd be the one to pay. I have little trouble being worried about them as they're still recruiting marginalized folks to fight a war to ultimately shift power back to the Republic for the betterment of everyone. need to care about their stakes a bit more, and we do get to see Mon not quite fit in with others in her class. People like her, even her husband, who back at their lavish apartment, preparing for a dinner, we learn doesn't like the way she speaks out against those in power, cutting off shipping lanes that have been leading to starvation. But we're just getting started on backstory on others outside of Andor, so give it some more time.
I want to know.
Yes.
I'm sure the husband's spying on her.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. He seemed like such a douchebag.
Yes. Before the episode wraps up, we catch up on Deirdre, who's overreaching to overachieve. She thinks Ferrix is the latest in a string of events that have taken place as a pattern for rebellion. Deirdre wants jurisdictional power and is told to be competent and tucked away. Clearly, she's not going to listen because the whole point of the fascism presented to us in Andor is that it's anything but competent. It's messy and selfish and brutish in its foolhardy cruelty, setting the stage for her almost inevitable team up with Karn.
Wow. Back on Aldani, Bell explains to Clem the identity Cassian was told to take up by Luthen, adding even more layers of distrust between them. There used to be settlements of generations of people the Empire cleared out to make the planet a distribution hub. The seven assembled to take on the armory are pretending to be space nature enthusiasts or sheep herders. They do have sheep. Yeah. Cassian, or Clem, meets Skeen, Tamarin, Nemec, and Cinta, and their contact at the garrison, Lieutenant Gorn. Gorn? Oh, no.
Yes.
Crossover. The team take a beat to hash out their apprehension at adding a new player late in the game, but ultimately they need all the help they can get. Even as they make it very clear that they hate Cassian being there as much as Bell does. The heist involves supplies stored in cabins and dammed up sacred rivers, which now hold weapons in the payroll of an entire Imperial sector. Clem is to drive a stolen roller freighter to take the crates of a payroll data and outrun TIE fighters, which is usually impossible. Lucky for them, there's a temple-long stretch of the run that will buy the cell time they need to escape. It's the hub for a celestial event called the Aldanis, used to gather for it to make a... I'm going to read that again. It's the hub for a celestial event Aldanis used to do... I'm going to read that again. It's the hub for a celestial event Aldanis used to gather for it to watch massive meteor showers, which occur every 3 years, covering the skies. The planet passes the belt and forms a beautiful eye, a window upon the galaxy over the horizon. It just so happens to be the perfect cover for the run. I can't wait to see this. A symbolic aspect of local beauty ignored and stamped out by the Empire's presence, offering the chance for resistance. The pressure is on. Cassian has just 3 days before the meteor shower, and it's not a lot of time how to learn to be a fighter in the burgeoning rebellion he's been thrust into.
I can't wait to see this. I really want to know what this whole thing is going to look like.
Right.
I mean, it's great that it's a natural kind of cover for them. And obviously, again, he's not dead. But like when we got to that point, I'm like, yes, are we going to see that? And I was like all into it. And then end scene. It's like, damn it.
I hope they poured some money into that. Wasn't Nemec that said he had the geek explanation of it? They're just quartz crystals or crystals, and everyone behind him is giving him the eye roll.
Yeah, his like scientific explanation for everything. Yeah.
So I see by the giant Easter egg or Easter bunny up in the sky like a bat signal, it's time for Easter eggs.
Easter eggs. I have my basket. Let's go.
Let's go. And the more you tighten your grip, Tarkin, the more systems will slip through your fingers, Princess Leia warned in the first Star Wars film. The seeds of rebellion were sown on countless worlds, the result of Imperial brutality and oppression, and the Rebel Alliance simply brought the different movements together. It's funny how our first brush with the Republic, when there's down ship on Cassian's planet, they weren't that happy a bunch, really.
No.
Yeah, and we always know them as such great good guys. Oh, the Republic. A little different take. So The process is still in its infancy on Andor, as demonstrated when Cassian Andor tries to find out who Luthen is working for. Alliance, SEP, guerrilla, partisan front, he suggests, referencing the Alliance and the remaining separatist movements common to in the corporate zone. The last is a nod to Saw Gerrera and his partisans, a brutal movement willing to go to the extreme lengths and not caring about collateral damage. Forrest Whitaker played Saw Gerrera in Rogue One, a Star Wars story, and will be reprising the role later in Andor. Saw is named later in Andor Episode 4. Apparently, Cassian Andor served on the planet of Mimban, albeit as a cook who ran, well, you know, left the oven on. Mimban is an important planet in the old Star Wars expanded universe, where they had a swamp world appeared in Alan Dean Foster's Splinter of the Mind's Eye, the first official tie-in novel published before the release of The Empire Strikes Back. Mimban was brought back into canon in Solo, a Star Wars story, which revealed Han Solo deserted the Imperial Infantry program at Mimban.
So everybody ducked out from there. Got it.
Yeah. Andor Episode 4 introduces the Imperial Security Bureau, responsible for enforcing the security of the Empire. Huh. They do a slightly better job than corporate security. The conversation includes a notable Andor Easter egg, which discusses a conflict on the planet Arvala 6, which the world has never seen before. Arvala 6 is little more than familiar to viewers. It's a planet where Din Djarin found Grogu in The Mandalorian Season 1. What? Reading also discusses the spice trade around Ryloth, the homeworld of the well-known Star Wars race called the Twi'leks. Wow, they really do pack it in there. The ISB meeting pivots to the discussion of shipments being sent to the Abrorian sector, an important region of the Outer Rim. There's some disruption because of a major Imperial project on the planet Scarif. This becomes a major center for top-secret research and is raided by the Rebel Alliance in Rogue One, a Star Wars story. That was so exciting. This ultimately led to Scarif's destruction when Grand Moff Tarkin chose to fire the Death Star This ultimately led to Scarif's destruction when Grand Moff Tarkin chose to fire the Death Star upon it rather than risk further secrets escaping. Eww. Kind of extreme.
Just take the whole planet out. Luthien gives Cassian Andor a down payment on his services. A Kuati signet made of blue kyber, which he describes as a sky stone in the ancient world. According to Luthien, it celebrates the uprising against the Rodican invaders. This references the Rodica from the classic Knights of the Old Republic series, a force-sensitive race who invaded the galaxy and were only stopped when they encountered the early Jedi, or Jedi, on the planet Tython. It's interesting that the signet comes from Kuat, confirming the Rodican invasion extended into the core region in canon. Kuat is an important Imperial shipyard. Episode 4 features a prominent display of Sith armor from the old expanded universe. This Sith Stalker armor was traditionally grafted onto the wearer's flesh and bone, worn by some of the most accomplished Sith assassins. The design of the Sith Stalker armor in Luthen's shop largely corresponds with the one worn by Darth Vader's secret apprentice, Galen Merrick, in the classic but non-canon Star Wars The Force Unleashed game.
That just sounds painful. I don't think that kind of... I'm good. I don't need that.
No. Luthen shows Mon Mothma what he described as a Utapan Mount Kujil. The planet Utapau is inhabited by three different races, the Pa'awans, the Utai, and tribes of Amani. So it's difficult to say which race this is connected to. Darth Vader's Grand Inquisitor was a Pa'awan, perhaps indicating Luthen is looking into the Jedi hunting Inquisitors.
Yikes.
Yeah, let's get the Jedis involved.
What appears to be Plo Koon's breathing mask? Jedi Master Plo Koon was one of the most distinctive prequel Jedi, Like all of his fellow Keldor, he wore a specialized breathing mask covering his eyes and nostrils. Surprisingly, Luthen has one such breathing mask on display. You know what? Again, whoever finds all of these Easter eggs, and Steve, you're doing a bang-up job because I am so focused on what's happening, I miss these little things in the background. This is a pretty unique antique shop, and that is likely the particular mask of one historical note, perhaps even the one worn by Plo Koon himself. Luthen does seem particularly interested in the history of the Jedi and the Sith, after all. Luthen's shop contains murals identical to those seen on Jedi Temple in Lothal, one situated on a vergence that could be used to access the world between worlds. Interesting. Coveted by Palpatine, the world between worlds was essentially another plane of existence, one that transcends time and space, and can be accessed only through the Force. I didn't even catch that, because that does that like show, hey, look, I'm a rebel, you know, I'm Force sensitive. What does that mean? It's only possible to access the world between worlds through certain vergences. But once there, the Force user can reshape reality with literally a wish. Andor is set before the destruction of the temple on Lothal, meaning these murals must originate from another vergence. Luthen takes Mon Mothma into the back room of his antiquity shop. Mm-hmm. And it's immediately clear it contains items he would not want to be on display. Oh, the black market dealings. Got it. One shelf contains both a Jedi and a Sith holocron. The former is a distinctive cube shape, while the latter is a pyramid. These are ancient repositories of knowledge and can only be opened by one of using the Force. It's fascinating to see a Jedi and Sith holocron stored side by side. According to Star Wars Rebels, the combination of light and dark sides of the Force can be used to open them together, unlocking the secrets of the universe. So dramatic.
Yeah, how much for that?
Right? Hey, what's going on there? Star Wars Mon Mothma returns home and learns that she has a busy evening ahead of her, a dinner with the governor of Hana, arranged by her husband. Hana is the capital city of Mon Mothma's homeworld, Chandrila, who she represents at the Imperial Senate. Guests include two prominent allies of the Emperor Palpatine, yuck, Sly Moor and Args Dangor. Mon Mothma is far from impressed, still angry over recent Imperial action on the planet Gorman. Little is known of the atrocity, which was first mentioned in Star Wars Rebels, another deep cut into Star Wars lore, proving just how well-connected Andor really is to the wider franchise. And just saying that her husband's all like, oh, they'll be sitting by me because this is the fun end. You'll be on the boring end. Yeah, I was like, oh.
Right then.
And then he's like, oh, I heard you got me a gift. She's I ain't got nothing for you.
Yeah.
Like, dude, you just said that and you think you're getting a present? No.
No.
So as we close out, I'm interested in everybody's ratings on a scale of 1 to 5. I spoiled mine by telling everyone it was 3.5. out of 5 payroll deductions. I think, Steve, you had a different...
Yeah, I gave it 4 out of 5 slaps in the face.
Woo.
You so deserve that.
I am going to give it 4 out of 5 Chiron crystals on a necklace. It's like, wait a second. Why do you have that? That's all I want to know. But
yeah, well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on each and every episode this season. Our deadline for feedback is 6 p.m. Eastern every Friday during the season. You can send your feedback via email or audio to contact us at fangirlzone.com.
Please review and rate us on iTunes and any other platform you use for your podcast. With good ratings and reviews, it helps other fans of the show find us, as there are plenty of other Star Trek podcasts out there. Tell your friends, and I hope you're enjoying our podcast. And don't forget to check out the other great Fangirl Zone podcasts.
Don't forget to check out www.fangirlzone.com. for our contacts page, for all of our podcasts that we have, because we have so many that are awesome. Hey, we're in spooky season. Go check out Chucky. Go check out Resident Alien. You know, go check out Surreal Estate. Or you can check out some other awesome ones that we have with this trio of peeps on the captain's chair. You know, Star Trek. But, you know, you'll probably like it too. So for this episode of the Mudhorn Clan cast,
I'm Steve. This mission is a suicide. Waiting to happen.
I'm Sean Fangirl S. Damn, there's no bars on this planet.
This is Beskar Dave. The last time I was on the run from the Empire, my date ordered me to stay down and tuck in. Can you say lightsaber?
Stopping. I was waiting for you to say what it was on there. That's why I'm like,